This is Patrick Gleason, and you've reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
Ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the podcast.
Robo fucking cop.
As far as I'm concerned, Bruce Willis can go get a bag of dicks. Get off my shit.
Confessions of a Movie Snob.com.
Ladies, children, sheep, some people consider us movie snobs. We consider ourselves podcasters. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Ethan.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm good. We're podcasting in the same room for the first time in quite a while.
Yeah, months. I mean, certainly the first time this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are, and we don't have to like wait. No. We did that one with Jess at your mom's place. But
that is true.
So, yeah, so we are doing a podcast tonight, and it's going to be a weird podcast. We're not talking a movie genre, we're not talking a director, we're not talking posters or anything like that. We're going to really getting into the theoreticals. Mm-hmm. What we are going to be doing is we are going to be talking about a speech that's making its way around the interwebs these days. It was a speech by Steven Soderbergh. It's his keynote speech at the 56th annual San Francisco International Film Festival, in which he goes on and discusses some of the finer points of cinema and things like that. Mm-hmm. So Ethan and I, while we enjoy some of Steven Soderbergh's movies and whatnot, we do not feel necessarily that an Academy Award-winning director is the right person to be talking about the state of cinema. So we're going to be talking about it as laymen, as people that actually go to these things.
Yes.
And we're going to also kind of get into, like, you know, some of the boring financial things about movies and, you know, just some of the realities. You know, it's fine and dandy to say that studios suck, but, you know, there's more to it than that. And they don't stay around because they're like, there's a reason for them.
Yes.
So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into, I think that I've just kind of given up and decided that this is going to be our bitch fest for this year. We had our,
that's a fair way to call this one.
Yeah. Yeah, because, last year we did our, These Movies Suck podcast. And, you know, I guess it was good to get all that off my chest, but it kind of ruined my day and the rest of the next day. No, cause it just
hopefully this won't ruin your day.
This is a bit more focused.
And,
yeah, it's more focused.
Topical.
And I'm also not going against something that, you know, I said I would never do on this podcast, which is another reason why I didn't like These Movies Suck. But we're just going to kind of talk about things in general. We're actually going to start at a central point. But before we get into any of that, we are going to talk a little bit about Geekly Happenings. Do you want to talk Harryhausen? Is there anything else besides that?
Well,
that you've noticed?
That I've noticed? Not really. Besides Harryhausen, you know, reached my ears. Of course, we're talking about film legend, special effects legend and icon Ray Harryhausen died, what was it, May 7th?
Whenever yesterday was. Is that May 7th?
Yes, May 7th, at the age of 92. So, I mean, this is a guy that innovated several, I mean, countless special effects techniques and inspired just a huge generation of filmmakers. And, you know, I think we're going to do a more specialized show on him in the future, but,
I think we will. I think the thing that I don't know. Did you really say mocap? I mean, stop motion animation?
No, no.
Because that's what he is.
That's what he, you know, basically came into being as a stop motion. He was inspired by King Kong.
Yep.
And then went on to do all this stop motion stuff that inspired countless filmmakers. I mean, one of my favorite movies, and that we were actually talking about it in a previous episode, the 1960s, was Jason and the Argonauts, with the very classic scene of the Argonauts fighting the skeletons, the stop motion skeletons, and that was all Ray Harryhausen. And,
yep.
You know, it's amazing stuff, the Voyages of Sinbad.
Valley of Guanji. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that one. It's such a weird, surreal movie.
And everyone
movie.
Knows how big a fan of the original Clash of the Titans I am.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I am too.
It's amazing. He did amazing work. I mean, even today, his stuff is impressive.
It was just like,
really impressive.
I mean, it feels crappy to say this, but he's kind of like one of those people that was on my radar of, okay, this guy's old, this guy is ill, this guy's going to die, and he's like one of like the last of a breed. I mean, I can't think of many people we have left like him, especially not from his era.
No.
I mean, he was making movies, you know, forever ago, 50, 60 years ago, longer ago than that.
An amazing guy and
amazing legacy.
You know, he'll be missed. And it was very unfortunate. I remember hearing my brother said something, but, you know, it was making rounds on Facebook that Ray Harryhausen had died. And so obviously we had to take that with a grain of salt because, you know, it's Facebook. That's why I fact checked by texting Aaron.
Yep, yeah, I was right there. As yeah. I held the pillow over his face and everything. No, I didn't do that. No, I didn't do that.
But yeah, he passed away. So I mean, that's just unfortunate, and I wanted to at least mention it. And
yeah.
with the promise that we're going to do more.
Yeah, and I completely agree. We are going to focus that. We do have a couple of shows we need to get out of the way before we get there, because
yeah.
It's actually kind of nice having shows planned for once. Not like what the hell are we doing next week? We actually know what's going on, and it's just a matter of fitting these in. So that's good. That is good. Other than that, I mean, Iron Man, is that it?
Iron Man 3, yes. It's a movie I had absolutely no time to get excited for.
Yeah.
Until I found myself going to see it on a Sunday afternoon. So,
mm-hmm.
I saw it with my brother, and, I think we're going to get into it a little bit here. And I guess we should put out there, if you haven't seen it.
Spoilers.
We're not going to pull punches on any spoilers.
And I'm going to, in post, I'm going to put in a girl from Ipanema right here and he's like, let him get away, because spoiler. Yeah. And at this point, they've been forewarned. We can say whatever we want about the movie at this point.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yep.
I thought, I'm not a professional movie reviewer, and I'm not going to sit here and even pretend to be. This one is my favorite Iron Man movie. I think it's the best Iron Man movie. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I still like Iron Man 1 better, but I did really, really, really like this one. I have an article that's going to go up on the website any day now where I talk about this movie and I talk about a specified point of that. And one of the things that I ended up, I pulled out of my brain space. I was proud of myself, pretending that I'm somebody of notoriety that's asked for a quote for the poster. And my quote would be that the first two films were about the iron. This one is about the man. And, I completely think that's right, because there's it's weird, because some people are all like, fucking boo, he isn't in the suit enough. I'm all like, but that's awesome.
Yeah. in some superhero movies, it's like some, Batman movies, Superman,
what have you,
whatever, it's like a lot of times you're just kind of waiting around until Batman shows up, or waiting around until, Superman shows up. What I've noticed in this, though, is one, it's a credit to Robert Downey Jr. I mean, we already know he's a fantastic actor.
Yep.
It's a testament to, one, good writing, two, it's a great character, and Downey Jr. makes it such a compelling and dynamic character that I for one, didn't care.
I didn't even notice it, actually. Somebody said it to me later, and I'm all like, really?
It's like Tony Stark is Iron Man, and Iron Man is Tony Stark. It's like, even if he's not in the armor, he's still Iron Man.
Exactly.
And there's no point especially in the third movie, where I'm sitting there waiting for him to put the suit on, because I'm like, I'm still entertained, and I'm still compelled by the character that's on the screen, so I don't care.
Yeah, and I think my whole thesis, or whatever you want to call it, is really backed up with the way that the final fight goes down, because he's literally running around jumping from suit to suit to suit to suit to suit, where Tony is the winning component, and, well, maybe Pepper, but Tony is the winning component of the fight, not the suit. And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
And that's what I really liked about it.
No, I thought that was fantastic. And
this night scene, like the Hulkbuster suit. And,
the Hulkbuster, my personal favorite, the red and red and the silver one from the late 80s.
Neat.
The stealth armor and stuff like that was really awesome.
Yeah, I'm not familiar enough with Iron Man. I imagine some of the Iron Man fanboys could say, okay, that was the Hulkbuster, Thor Buster, and then the stealth suit and the anti bomb one and the underwater one.
He's had so many. And what I really thought was great about it is, like, because there are the fans of the movies through the Avengers, they're keeping track of his suits. So
yeah.
Like, okay, well, this is the Mark V, this is the Mark VI, and this one they're like Mark 42.
He's like, what is his 15th, and he looks down at his arm and it says 42. He's like, about that something.
Uh-huh. And you're just waiting for the Hall of Armor at some point, and whereas we don't really see the Hall of Armor, it's there.
it comes to us. We don't go to the hall, the hall comes to us,
and it all works. He has that the remote control aspect, and it's just some fascinating stuff. And there's a great article my brother turned me on to where that sort of examines and contrasts Tony Stark and Steve Rogers. Whereas Steve Rogers is the Captain America of the 1940s. In a way, Tony Stark is the Captain America of the modern generation.
Right, absolutely.
You know, it's the technology with all that. And it's a very interesting contrast because they are essentially the same type of character, just in different eras.
Mm-hmm.
This movie just... I was very happy with Iron Man 2 in that it was still about Iron Man.
Yep.
I've said it before, it's in these superhero movies, especially in the sequels, you fall into this trap of it's not about the hero, it's about the villain.
Yeah.
Because they're the new character and they're the one you need to learn about.
Yeah. Like,
and you already know everything about Spider-Man or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But in Iron Man 2, Whiplash is in it.
Kinda.
Less than 20 minutes.
Yeah. Same with Justin Hammer.
Yeah. It's still more about Tony Stark, mm-hmm. you know? And this movie is the same way. Is it still about Tony Stark? I mean, this guy's just a good, cool enough character that you can tell compelling and good stories about him. You can bring in his rogues gallery, but ultimately his rogues gallery are unimportant.
Right.
And I think the comics are sort of that way too. And we're going to be getting into the butthurt fanboy thing here.
Yeah, that's going to have to come up because, you know, like you said, like people like want these movies to be about the villain.
Yeah.
And the villain in this one was, you know, presented to us as the Mandarin, as played by Ben Kingsley. Mm-hmm. However, that is not the case, as it were. And spoiler alert, you're 15 minutes in, and I've been saying, you know, spoiler alert every step of the way, but spoiler alert one final time.
But quite frankly, yes, throughout the whole marketing campaign, mm-hmm. everything you've been hearing, they lied to you.
And I don't know that they lied to you.
They omitted certain details.
And what
quite frankly, omission, bravo.
Who? To them? Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, and
I love being able to go to a movie and still be surprised.
I did too. And I've said it to Ethan, and I've thought it to myself, that I've decided that if let's say a Roger Ebert understood movies on a level of 9 and your layman understands them a level 4 or 5, I think I understand them a level 6, 7, something like that, because of the whole Mandarin thing. Back when the trailer first comes out, you can go dig through our show. I said it on the show that there's something weird going on with Ben Kingsley's voice, and I believe I used the word deliberate, and it reminded me of old school Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what I was picking up on there, but it turned out what I was picking up on there is the Mandarin is actually not the Mandarin. He is an actor.
He is an actor who is hired to play the part of the Mandarin.
And
the Mandarin is just an invention.
Yeah, there is no Mandarin. But it's funny because you're on the internet, you're on a podcast, so you probably know a thing or two about fanboys and whatnot. Yeah. And... yeah, I as soon as I heard about this, I think I'm wah-ha-ha-ha'd to myself because I could see the butt hurt coming a million miles away, and boy did it come. And you know, I thought it was cool as hell, but I thought it was really cool.
It was one of those things. I've never been a huge Mandarin fan. I mean, he's a character that's made from the Cold War, from the 60s, 70s, and they had to update him, and I think they did it in a bloody brilliant way.
And here's my thing about it. And I wrote a long article. It's going to be on Confessions.
Well, they updated him without him being just a cookie cutter Osama bin Laden.
And you know what? And I wrote an article, and I get into that, to where people are all like, you know, fucking boo. You know, they pissing on the most important villain of Iron Man, which, you know, first off is kind of debatable. I think the more important villain's Stain, but that's neither here nor there. I'm not a student of Iron Man.
And I would say the biggest villain in Iron Man is Tony Stark.
Well, there's that angle too. But they said what they should have done is they should have just updated him from the Oriental crazy magic man with magic rings to a Al-Qaeda type member. And like, that's a really good idea, to go ahead and keep perpetuating stereotypes and racism and shit like that. Because boy, we like your comic books from 35 years ago.
And the awesome thing is that's exactly what we thought they were doing.
But they did it correctly though. Yes. Because they did update the character, this is so stretching on my part, and I'm fine with that. I stretch, and I'd make a dumb podcast about movies. But they did update the character because, you know, honestly, who's the real threat out there? The brown man out in the cave, or the white man who is controlling the news and telling us who to fear while doing bad shit over there, which is what was going on with Aldrich Killian.
Aldrich Killian, yeah. And it's great to see Guy Pearce in a role and in a movie that, that is good.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I remember seeing him back in L.A. Confidential and wanting to see more of this guy, and then he kind of...
Yeah, he's been in some good stuff here and
there. Some good stuff here and there, but he just...
He's kind of in the middle of a renaissance, because he was kind of getting relegated to, like, you know third-rate roles and, you know, direct-to-video shit and stuff like that. And then he was in The King's Speech, and, he started, doing some stuff a little bit more than that.
Yeah, but... Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he plays a great villain. What I really enjoyed about the movie was that there's still that aspect of the shared universe is that you feel that this is a world where Thor exists.
Yep.
You feel that this is a world where Captain America exists.
Yep.
And I say it a thousand times, when you sit down and you read, say, Fantastic Four, you're not going to sit down and read the Fantastic Four to read how the Avengers save the day.
Right.
This is an Iron Man movie. So, I mean, you're not here to see the Hulk beat up the bad guy. You're here to see Iron Man do his thing.
And
they did it in such a great way.
They did do it in a great way.
It felt organic. It felt just natural.
I've got some friends.
But they still mention things because there's distinctive fallout from the Avengers.
I mean, and
it's not just, oh, yeah, we had that thing in New York. It's, I mean, he's having panic attacks over it. And, I mean, it is a story element, but it's not like, it's like, well, you have to have
seen
the Avengers.
It's not even the impetus of the movie.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not even the impetus of the movie, but it's a nice detail.
It's definitely a sequel to Iron Man, not the Avengers.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think it's more of a sequel to the Avengers.
See, I disagree.
I don't know. I mean, but it's kind of a sequel to both. I mean, it could be Iron Man 2.5, and it could be Avengers half or whatever. I mean there's elements to both.
It felt like a,
but it's its own thing, book. Also. Yeah,
it felt like a comic book story in a movie. I mean, it's in a different medium, so I mean, it's through this other lens.
And I have some friends that aren't butthurt about the Mandarin thing, but they didn't like the movie for other reasons. And one of the reasons they had was they're like, this is now a shared universe, correct? I'm like, yeah. So we got the Avengers and Captain America and so on and so forth. They said they could not believe for a second that Steve wouldn't have been all over the Mandarin shit as soon as that happened. And I have two answers for that. One, we don't know what he's doing. You know, he could be off dealing with Bucky or whatever. And two, let's not forget Captain America. He's a soldier. He follows orders. And who was assigned to deal with the Mandarin? War Machine or Iron Patriot, but War Machine. And so therefore, he's going to follow orders. He's not just going to go off on his own and kick the Mandarin's ass.
Again, though, it's an Iron Man movie.
Yeah,
you're not going to watch an Iron Man movie to see Captain America.
And I get that, but this is idiotic.
Yeah, this is the idiotic. Let's inject this realism. First of all, what's one guy?
Yeah.
Captain America, Steve Rogers, is one man.
Yeah.
Okay. He obviously has other things going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Tony Stark, this is his story, and I'm never.
And they weren't. And he also wasn't directly after Tony at first.
Shield's nowhere in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great.
I didn't notice it until afterwards. I'm like, holy crap, no Shield.
Yeah, no Shield, no Nick Fury, nothing. I mean, after the Avengers, you know, you expect Shield to have a heavier hand and stuff.
Especially with the television show coming out.
They're completely gone.
Yep.
And it's great.
Yep.
You know, and it's not like, oh, I hate Shield. It's you know, this is an Iron Man story. I don't, you know, we don't want to be over, because he doesn't work for Shield. I mean, he's a consultant.
Yeah, he's the consultant.
Exactly. But it was fabulous.
I really enjoyed it. I want to see it again. I didn't go in 3D, and now I wanted to. Because of, like, the last scene when he was jumping from suit to suit, I just thought that'd look really cool in 3D.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolutely fantastic movie. It's
fucking Ben Kingsley.
It's a great follow-up to The Avengers.
Ben Kingsley should win an Oscar for that.
And
at the very least, he should get a lot of money for the shit he's going to take. But he is also like, fuck you, I'm Ben Kingsley.
And there's a great line that Killian says in the movie.
Okay.
A big guy with a hammer falls out of the sky. Subtlety kind of goes out the window.
Yep.
And that just felt like a great evolution of, like, from where you were at in Iron Man,
yeah,
to where you're at now after all of the events of Thor, Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, Avengers. You're now at this point in Captain America. You're now at this point where, yeah, subtlety's kind of out the window.
And I really liked
it. And it felt like, and it feels like a natural progression.
And, and back to the to the Mandarin thing, but a line that I loved was the scene after the Mandarin reveal, and Tony and Rhodey are in there, like, are grilling him. And, they're asking him all this information, and he's got his beard, and he's falling asleep.
Did you just nod off?
Did you just nod off? And then frickin' Rhodey's all like, this is the Mandarin? And Tony's like, yeah, it's embarrassing, isn't it? That's what I feel about the Mandarin, honestly, in the modern day and age.
Yeah, exactly.
And people don't get that. I don't get how they don't get that.
Smart writing.
It's very like, smart. It's Shane Black.
Well, yeah, because as a writer, you're going to look at this character from the Cold War, from that thing, and go, this is really an embarrassing character.
Yeah.
And he uses this.
Yeah, I know.
It was just wonderful writing. Great direction. You could tell really early on that it's directed, but not directed by Jon Favreau.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And I liked how Favreau's in it. They take him out in a coma thing, but it doesn't feel forced.
It's a good part of the plot.
It's a good part of the plot, and I love how he's talking. He's now the head of security.
Yeah.
He talks about
badge.
I'm supposed to be here. Uh-huh. There's little jokes there, but. How he is he talks about it. It's like, yeah, can you imagine telling people that I'm Iron Man's bodyguard? I had to quit while I had some dignity.
Yeah.
And that feels just like a little nod because he did walk away from the directing, but it's obviously no hard feelings and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it was great to see him in there and great to see him.
Yep.
I bet he was relieved, to be honest.
Oh, like, oh hell yeah. He probably did all this stuff in that movie in less than a week.
Yeah.
He's all like, this is awesome.
Yeah, but
have fun with that fucking suit that doesn't. Yeah.
And he really worked well. Pepper Potts is great, and I'm interested to see.
I was happy to see Dummy.
Yeah, I was happy to see Dummy resurrected.
Yeah, I almost cried when Dummy died.
Yes. Potato Gun Mark II. The kid was great. I thought
that was a nice little. It didn't feel precious at all either.
No, it didn't feel tripe.
Yeah, I liked it.
Or anything like that. It was.
I liked it.
The kid and Tony had a great chemistry, and it didn't. They didn't overdo it, and it's like he's gonna have this little kid sidekick for the whole movie. Now he has him. He's there for a little while, but
to talk shit on him and make him feel bad and leave.
That scene was hilarious.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
The movie is just full of great writing and great acting, and it's just a.
I'm trying to find something negative to say. I mean, I didn't like how Pepper became extremis, but
who cares?
I don't care. I don't let a single element ruin a movie for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I really could have, especially from the point of view that I'm coming from, I could have really lived without the whole I'm the real Mandarin lines. Mm-hmm. Like that, because that just adds, because it gives fuel to the fire of people with no subtlety, I've been saying.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm the real man. It's like, haha, see, Guy Pearce is playing the Mandarin. Fuck that. Guy Pearce is Caucasian and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, that's not what he's saying, you fucking idiot. He's saying there is no Mandarin.
You are a dumbass.
Yeah, I mean, I just hate the lack of subtlety, the people that I just, but.
Absolutely fantastic.
I enjoyed it a lot. I would probably rather watch it than the Avengers, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and there's definitely going to be the butthurt fanboy. You've called it, I think, that this summer is going to be the summer of the butthurt fanboy.
And we got some more news about, I guess I won't spoil it, but there's some Man of Steel noise, but news that is going to make some people really goddamn angry. And I think that the Wolverine is just going to kind of offend on all levels.
That's natural with an X-Men movie. A lot of X-Men fans needed to get
But I think this one's going to be
X-Men. The first X-Men movie?
Yeah. I think that there's going to be a lot of, like, boo, this isn't Aronofsky, and they're not even going to give it a chance.
This isn't the Frank Miller thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, you know what? Years and years, so far as the X-Men movies, years and years ago, I divested myself from the X-Men universe. You know what? The movies is its own universe, and the best way it's described to me when you're looking at these comic book movies is that it is a new interpretation. It is the story in a new medium, and whenever you translate something to a new medium, it has to change.
Yep.
And for the people who are going all apeshit about them quote unquote changing the Mandarin, I call foul. How many times has a character gone through revision in comic books? How many times have they retconned stuff? How many times have they redone the origin of Superman or redone the origin of Iron Man, Batman, and all that stuff? And people let it happen in the comic books, and they it's much more acceptable. But they do it in a movie, and suddenly it's blasphemous.
Yeah.
And for that, I call foul. I call bullshit on that. So.
Well, I do too. But, you know, I especially call foul when they're all like, you know, fucking boo, they changed the Mandarin, he's so important to the story of Iron Man, and yada, 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 yada. But this is the movie. We have two movies previous to this. We have nothing other than a few of those ring thingies around to say that he's showing up. And it's not like he would fit in this universe. And quite frankly, the fact that they put him in at all...
Mm-hmm. We know that obviously with this with the thing the way things are going with phase two of the Marvel Cinematic Universe
looks like phase two is moving away. It's moving away from the comics. I mean, I think it's becoming its own thing.
I think it's doing more cosmic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already been revealed that phase three is going to involve Doctor Strange.
Yep.
And that's going to be obviously going to be dealing more with the more down to earth, more magic stuff. Who knows?
A lot more awesome too.
But frankly, who cares? I know Ant-Man is kicking off phase three. So as far as Iron Man 3, I say bravo. I'm very much looking forward to Thor the Dark World.
Mm-hmm.
So far, Marvel's just hitting every beat that they need to hit. They're doing everything right. You can't please everyone, and for the people that want to whine, the fanboys that have their butts being hurt right now, they can, well, suck it.
Yep, pretty much. I mean, and it's not even that. I mean, I don't even know. I just know that apparently there's several different types of fans in this world,
mm-hmm.
and I don't even know how we're gonna get there. But we're gonna be talking about all kinds of things tonight. But I think this is gonna be the difference in. And, you know, why don't we try to be less derogatory than calling them butthurt fanboys? But that's what they act like. They act like petulant children.
How about
comic book purists? Why don't we call them that?
Sure.
And I guess my co-host on the Truthful Comics podcast, Manuel, is one of these folks. I mean,
sure.
He hated, like, all the Nolan Batman movies because they aren't – he hated The Dark Knight Rises especially because of a bunch of crap, and he nitpicked a bunch of other stuff about the other two, said that, you know, fucking – just all kinds of stuff, and you know this and that.
Back in issue 383, Batman did.
It's not even that. I mean, he's a very principled comic book person, sure. and he's one of the ones that's like, the Mandarin is important to this, and he hates it that a director will come in and scoop up this character with all this history.
Heaven forbid that a director or writer comes along and does something interesting with a stale character.
And that's just it. He sees it as I guess the people like this, and I'm using this guy as my main focus or what have you, but it seems like he feels like they haven't earned the right to mess with these characters.
Sure.
And I don't agree with that. I mean, quite frankly, the way I see it is this is the Iron Man movies. This is not a direct adaptation of, mm-hmm. Extremis or this or that or so on and so forth. It's, at best inspired by, but it's kind of its own thing. And I think that to just take a movie like, or to take a story like, say, Extremis and try to translate it verbatim to the screen would bore me to fucking death,
mm-hmm.
because there's no point to it. And then, but by the same, or rather, on the other side of the coin, if you're going to be changing it, you need to change it a lot. Otherwise, it's just, again, fucking boring to me.
Right.
So, I need to see some extreme changes there. And I guess I got to have a little bit of sympathy for the people that want this pure, but at the same time, I can't have any sympathy for them because you cannot make a movie or comic book into a movie. They're two separate things. You can do it as verbatim as fucking possible, but they're still two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't see the appeal of wanting to see the stuff that you already know but bigger and shinier and
sure.
stuff like that. I don't know, man. I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, you're gonna call them petulant children, but you have anything else on that?
I think honestly, if everything, if movies, books, everything is, if you have the original and then someone comes along and just redoes it the exact same way, I think that gets boring.
I do too.
After a while, you know,
not even after a while.
The
once.
First time it's like I've already read this, so yeah. I know exactly what's going to happen. And you know, it's I think it's really arrogant and really presumptuous of the comic book purists, mm-hmm. we'll call them, to basically balk and bitch about, well, this person came in and they ruined this for me. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, this is their interpretation. One, you have the original you can always go back to and enjoy. Two, you're going off of what you have in your imagination of your interpretation of the story, of what you would do with the special effects, of what you would do with this. And quite frankly, no one is going to do that the same as anyone else. And
on top of that, you're an asshole in Kansas or whatever. Exactly. You're not Joss fucking Whedon or...
Yeah. No, and it's like you
when and there's that, because they said, oh, you know, Whedon did such a good job in the Avengers. You did this, did that, so on and so forth. Well, guess what, motherfucker? Guess who the Thor 3 script had to make it through before it made it to the screen? Joss fucking Whedon.
Iron Man 3. Yeah.
Or, well, that's what I meant. Yeah, Iron Man
Thor
3.
Thor 3 as well. But,
well, all of them.
Yeah, no, it's... It's one of those things that
they do, I just don't think they want to be happy.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think that is where it's at, and
it's weird to me because there seems to be like this contingent of fans, and boy, am I a study in this. I've been at this for 14 years or whatever with the whole Star Wars thing, mm-hmm. and there seems to be like this contingency of fandom that seems to think you need to find reasons why you don't like something. When I personally feel it's kind of the other way around, you need to look for the reasons why. You should like something, why you do love it. And I don't know. I mean, I don't see the appeal in going to a movie and tearing it apart to the point where you don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, quite frankly, it's like if they're adapting some sort of previous work and you expect it to be exactly the same as it was, then what's the point of going and seeing it? You know,
because it's awesome. I've asked that question. And the answer I get is because it was awesome or epic or something like that.
Yeah,
And so is the book. So make something new.
But it's like you built it up in your mind so much that you're going to go see it, and no matter what, you're going to be disappointed. And mm-hmm. what you need to do is just divorce yourself from it and go, okay, I want to see this person's take on it, because at least now we're going to get something, you know? I really personally, as far as Iron Man 3, I'm happy that they didn't directly adapt Extremis, or they didn't directly adapt Demon in a Bottle, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They took elements here and there from various Iron Man stories, came up with new stuff. Hell, Iron Man 2 was an entirely original story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there wasn't a lot of people bitching about that.
Oh, the yeah, there were. Not
there
as
were,
vocally
not
about
Not as vocally
this.
About as Mandarin, sure. But... you know, we had a co-host at a time who was pissed off that Whiplash's head didn't get vaporized in that end explosion.
And we asked, what about the robot suit in a briefcase? And
there's that. Yeah. But you know, inherently these movies are fantasy movies, and they're here to be, entertaining. So
I liked all the Iron Man.
I think the Iron Man movies are fantastic.
Yep.
This one, I already said it. This is my personal favorite one.
This really makes it a strong trilogy. I mean, that's something a lot of people are noticing.
It makes it a trilogy, first of all. It makes it a natural trilogy, and it sets it up to get more stories, but it doesn't feel like, okay, well, Iron Man 4 is going to be a continuation of Iron Man 3. It's a new story with this character. It's the next story arc. It's the next issue. It's the next graphic novel. Whatever.
It's like phase two, if you will.
Oh, whoa.
Whoa. It's funny how they did that. Now, again, you know, me and my clairvoyance, I called this shit last summer. Mm-hmm. If you remember right, I said that it was before, you know, The Dark Knight Rises came out, before The Avengers came out. I said everyone's going to suck the Avengers cock, they're going to attack Dark Knight Rises, and that's exactly what happened. And I said then they're going to start pouncing all over Marvel with Iron Man 3, and hey, look what happened.
Hey, there you go.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's last I checked, it had upper 70s on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's made a metric fuck ton of money, so they can bitch all they want.
75, some 179 million, 179 million domestic, and then 190 foreign. I mean, this movie is just a... The Marvel movies are just third highest grossing, I think I read, third highest grossing film franchise of all time.
Not bad for, what, 9 movies?
Yeah, not bad for movies that started in 2004, I want to say, when Iron Man came out. So, yeah.
Iron Man? No, God, no. Iron Man came out in 2007.
The 2007?
It came out same year as The Dark Knight, the first Iron Man.
Geez. See, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's a six-year-old franchise.
Yeah, so not bad. So obviously they're doing something right.
Right.
But you know, we're getting ready for Man of Steel to hopefully resurrect the whole DC thing. So
we'll see. I hope it does. I really hope it does. Whoa, man, I think this shit just kicked in, because last time I looked, it was 2 weeks ago, and I was at Ethan's house, but now I'm at my house, and I'm 2 weeks older. This is weird.
I know.
This is so weird.
It's like, I'm still at my house,
yeah, but
I'm in another room.
But
so
I'm
that's
like,
odd, and I'm wearing different clothes.
Yeah, me too. And I'm like, you know, in the basement, my hair is longer, and I feel older, and life has kicked me more. No, actually, what's going on here is we just recorded that last Iron Man bit. I think it was 3 weeks ago. And I'm not even going to call it technical problems, because the technical problem was I was acting like a technical idiot, because, you know, for some reason, you actually have to push record when you record a show, because I stopped in the middle of it to go do something and then didn't start it again and blah, blah, blah. So that's just kind of what we're going to do here, is we're going to just jump in and we're going to talk about the current Steven Soderbergh's State of Cinema speech. Now, I believe last time the way that we did this, and I'm not gonna spend my whole time say, well, I think last time. I'm gonna try to start this off the way that I did last time, and just kind of see what happens with this conversation. You know, I'm gonna see what happens with this conversation organically, because I remember what we said last time vaguely, but I don't care. This is now, and that was then. So I'm going to open up with reading the Steven Soderbergh's speech that he gave at the it was his keynote speech at the 56th annual San Francisco International Film Festival. And it's been making its, you know, ways around the interwebs for a couple of weeks. And some people actually, you know, I'm not going to say that some people think it's awesome, some don't. The only people that I know that don't think it's awesome are Ethan and I. But, you know, we like things about it. But and it's, you know, several pages. If you want to read what we're talking about, it's available online. You can look it up and read it. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the first paragraph in it, and then I'm going to kind of put my thoughts in there, and then we're just going to kind of open up and talk about it. So the very first paragraph says, "A few months ago, I was on this JetBlue flight from New York to Burbank, and I like JetBlue, not just because of the prices. They have this terminal at JFK that I think is really nice. I think it might be the nicest terminal in the country, although if you want to see some good airports, you got to go to a major city in another part of the world, like Europe or Asia. They're amazing airports. They're incredible, and they're quiet. You're not being assaulted all the time by music. I don't know when it was decided that we all need a soundtrack everywhere we go, but I was just in the bathroom upstairs, and there was a soundtrack accompanying me at the urinal. I don't understand. So I'm getting comfortable in my seat. I spent the extra $60 to get the extra leg room, so I'm trying to get comfortable as we make altitude. And there's this guy on the other side of the aisle in front of me, and he pulls out his iPad to start watching stuff. I'm curious to see what he's going to watch. He's a white guy in his mid-30s, and I began to realize that what he's done is loaded a half a dozen action store extravaganzas, and he's watching each one of the action sequences. He's skipping over all the dialogue and the narrative. This guy's flight is going to be 5.5 hours of just mayhem porn." And, okay, I mean, this is, you know, pages and pages long, and if you actually watch the speech, which is also available out there, it's like 45 minutes long, so I'm not going to read it all to you. But I started off reading that part of it because I think that paragraph kind of encompasses the entire attitude of the article. Now,
I agree.
I like Steven Soderbergh. I think he's a good director. I've seen a couple of the Ocean's movies. I liked that. I really liked Traffic, which he did direct, not Michael Mann. And he won an Oscar for it. And I liked last week when we did our cancer viral outbreak movies, I picked Contagion. I liked that one. So he's done movies that I like. So this isn't me like, you know, going nya 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 at a director I don't like. It's not like that. I respect him. However, I feel that is a pretty petulant article. Well, excuse me, that pretty petulant paragraph that I just read, because my thought about it is, you know, there's all kinds of different ways of looking at it. A, it's kind of elitist to say what he's saying, because he's all like, you know, oh, this guy's just watching this, you know, this stupid action movies, and, you know, I like art and blah, blah, blah. And then there's also the angle of he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. For all he know, he could be a film student. He's writing an article about the stupidity of, you know, action flicks in this and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or maybe the guy just watches this shit because it's how he unwinds. And so, you know, there's just lots of different ways of looking at this. Now, what was your overall thought about this, Ethan? I mean, where do you jump in? What are your thoughts about this article and his attitude over this whole thing?
Well, I think that first paragraph really sets the tone for what he sort of comes off as being a bit uppity. Is sort of the non-fancy word that I can come up with, but it, you know, we're big fans of letting people watch what they want to watch. Mm-hmm. But it's awful presumptuous of Soderbergh to basically come off and leap off of this as saying, you know, well, you know, the movie industry is broken because of all this and because of all these, you know, there's these Michael Bay movies and there's all this, and then there's my movies, which, you know, or
my movies are good.
Yeah. His movies are good, but they're inherently different in that I firmly believe that there is a place for movies like G.I. Joe and Transformers out there because, well, they make truckloads of money and people go see them. Mm-hmm. But not that many people go see, say, something like Contagion.
Right. And actually, Contagion did really well.
Yeah, but it didn't do Transformers money for crying out loud.
No, it didn't.
But what I sort of get from the whole article at large is a lot of him basically whining about how there's not a lot of art anymore and how people, the audience and the moviegoers aren't interested in seeing this art. And so, you know, studios are making bad movies and so they should make better movies so people see better movies. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think that there are better movies out there, quote unquote, better movies that if people wanted to go see them, they could nowadays. Mm-hmm. There's so many different platforms for someone to get those movies nowadays. iTunes, Netflix, and you know, some movies are coming out pay-per-view, especially those independent movies, mm-hmm. are coming out on demand first, you know, on pay-per-view first, and then you can get them. And there's a lot. If you want to seek out some sort of art house type of film, you can do that really, really incredibly easy in this time. But what I sort of get from what the audience wants to go see is the audience wants to go see some spectacle and get some good escapism in there. Every time you want to go see a movie, do you want to get this big underlying moral message or something in there
that for the just, truth?
Yeah. You know, but sometimes you just want to get out of the house and turn off your brain and enjoy something for a bit. And sometimes you want to watch something with some more brain to it. But I, for one, find it easier to and better to get into those types of movies when you're in the comfort of your own home. But that's just sort of me. But sort of what I get from the whole from his, at least that first paragraph was awful, awfully. Really, he was just really snooty about it. You know, it's like he comes off as, I know we call ourselves Confessions of a Movie Snob, but he comes off as very snobbish in it.
How many times do you and I need to say the Confessions of a Movie Snob is a fucking joke?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, you know, we're all like, yeah, go watch your fucking Twilight movie. I don't care, but I don't want to see it. And I don't know. I mean, it is certainly, you know, kind of snooty of, you know, well, hell, I'll say you and I are being snooty, Ethan, because we're sitting here and saying, you know, that, you know, Steven Soderbergh, is acting snobbish and, you know, I see the difference of what we are saying as that I'm not saying that he shouldn't be watching that, but I do kind of think that there is I do think there is value in saying that it's kind of shitty to say what people should and should not be watching. I mean, maybe he needs to, maybe he just needs to understand that, you know, yeah, he's got a certain taste, but maybe that certain taste is not what, you know, your average movie audience is it's wanting. I mean, that's where I, you know, I keep coming up on this. I mean, he makes a lot of really good points about, you know, maybe the reason that why your Transformers movies, your Iron Man movies, or your Star Trek movies or whatever are doing as well as they are in the theaters is because of the fact that, you know, that's all that's being offered to them. I don't know. I mean, there might be, that might be valid, that might be a truth, but I don't know if I agree with that, you know, because I do think that, you know, movies do kind of get made a lot by, they'll get made a lot by a committee, you know, they'll, you know, they'll be your studio executives or your movie producers will go out and say, well, okay, I need to make a movie that, you know, makes, you know, X amount of dollars. You know, what franchises are available to me? You know, what's the current pulse of the current movie market? Oh, okay. I see that Iron Man 3 made over $1 billion in 3 weeks, which, by the way, did you see that, Ethan? I don't know if I'd asked you that.
No, I hadn't actually.
Iron Man 3. Yeah, it was kind of weird. 2 weeks ago, I was doing the Truthful Comics podcast, and we were just talking about Iron Man. We said something about how much money it made, and, you know, I said, I don't know how much it is. You know, keep talking. I looked it up, and we were on day 13, and I looked it up. It was like $900-something million already, and I was like, oh, my God. And, you know, that's not a fluke, and, you know, I mean –
no.
I mean, maybe there's value to what he's saying about, you know, it's because it's what the studios are offering, but I don't know if I agree with that, because, you know, like, look at, I mean, you know, how many movies come out that make over $1 billion? I think there's, what, I don't know, 15 of them in history? And how many how many movies are there in history? A lot. So I do think that there is something more to what the people go see than, you know, just, you know, what the studio is forcing us to eat, because, you know, obviously we don't have free will and we aren't able to watch anything except for what the machine tells us to watch. You know,
yeah, well, there's a whole assumption that if the studio doesn't make it, we won't see it. You know, it's like, well, the studio is making these movies because we go see these movies, mm-hmm. and because people pay over $1 billion worldwide to go see it. I mean, if people didn't do that, they wouldn't make Iron Man 3.
Right.
You know, they'd make a Side Effects 2.
Right.
Know? But it's one of those things that you just have you're spending you have a movie that cost $150 make the $150-200 million marketing, but, well, now that movie's made $1 billion worldwide. That's a huge success, you know. And you know, by gum, the Hollywood likes making money. It's a business, and they're gonna do more of that. But if they were doing, you know, $2 million or $4 million art house movies, and then they turned around and made, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, we spent $400 million on this and we made $800 million, so we doubled their money. So, hey, it's a $400 million profit. We're awesome. Have this movie, or we spent $4 million and we made $8 million, so we made $4 million. Okay. Uh-huh. I'd rather get the $400 million.
Yeah. That's Jesus sort of Christ. I'm sorry. I was just looking up Iron Man 3 on box office. I did this when I was doing this on Ethan. It's I don't see days. 25 days, okay? $1.147 billion. It's the number 5 movie of all time.
That's amazing.
Jesus Christ. I had no idea. I mean,
that's a great movie.
Yeah, it is, but everybody fucking hates it. Don't forget that. And then
it's a failure.
It's a failure because that guy doesn't like it. But at any rate, there's this other angle that I don't even remember if we touched on last week. You know, he's talking about, you know, like this diet of, you know, mayhem porn, and, you know, basically saying that it's less valid than, you know, something else. Studios make what makes money. Okay.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we would be having this conversation if every fucking movie at the box office was, you know, what was, you know, Side Effects, was Ocean's 11. And also, you know, I like Steven Soderbergh. You know, he's got, you know, I just wasn't a fan of the speech. And, you know, I said it last time, but we're recording over that, so you didn't hear it. But I said it last time that this speech is available in transcript, and it's also available on a video that you can actually watch him say it. And I read the script, and I'm like, you know, this guy's a dickhead or whatever my thoughts were. And then I watched it, and I became much more sympathetic to him because he does come across as a guy that loves movies, but I you know, there's also kind of an angle that maybe studios make movies for the key demographic, if I remember right, is 17 to 27 year old females, something like that. And Steven Soderbergh is a 53-year-old man or a 49-year-old man or whatever it is that he is. And, you know, so he's not, you know, he's not part of the demographic. It's kind of like what we keep talking about with Star Wars. You know,
maybe, it's kind of what he keeps talking about in his speech is, you know, maybe I should go ask my teenage daughter.
He's like, yeah, and, motherfucker. You know, maybe he should, you know? You know, shut up at the film festival and go talk to your daughter instead of saying, oh, all movies suck and I'm a, you know, and I'm worth $50 million and, you know, I'm going to complain about the system that's done so well for me. I mean, that's another thing that I'm just kind of itching my head about. And I'm also itching my head about the fact that he's like, oh, only thing that they do is they make, you know, crap after crap after crap. And who's the guy that made three Oceans movies? I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, and you know, the Ocean, I've only seen the first two Oceans movies. I haven't seen the third ones, and they're fine. But, you know, it's just, and I don't want this to be attacking the guy because, you know, again, I like his stuff. But to me, it is a big problem with this is this is an Academy Award winning filmmaker. He's got an Oscar for directing. He's a successful director. I mean, he's like one of those names that comes out like, ooh, Steven Soderbergh's, you know, working on the script for this. It could be interesting and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he makes a speech and he sounds like any asshole on the internet to me. Every asshole on the internet. He just sings.
Well, you know, preface this also by, I mean, how many times has he, quote unquote, left the film industry only just to come back?
Two or
you
three.
Know, and it's that whole, okay, dude, you know, the first time it was like, oh, okay, you're retiring because you want to do this, and okay, now you're back, and after you come back three or four times, you know, it just kind of seems like you're sort of kind of sour grapes. You're like, you know what, my these movies that I want to do aren't being made, so I'm just going to go over here, but I'm going to come back and do this movie and make some money with it. And it's just kind of dickish to me.
He's definitely, you know, and again, you know, maybe we're just going to get into, you know, different words here. I don't know if dickish is the right thing, but he does seem very insecure. He does seem wishy-washy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wonder about, and, you know, again, you know, watching it and, you know, seeing, you know, his, he does seem very flummoxed. He does seem very, you know, frustrated about what's going on, but
I think the word we're looking for is arrogant.
Okay. Arrogant's fine.
At least that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. Maybe it's the word you're looking for. And again, the first paragraph, absolutely arrogant. You know, that made me want to smack his stupid fucking hipster glasses off his big bald head. But, you know, overall, the tone of it, I think it's, you know, flummoxed. I think it's confused. I think he's trying to figure something out. And I kind of wonder if this was the right, you know, if this was the right time, you know, for him to, you know, come out and say all this. Because, you know, again, you know, he's a smart guy. Well, he directs
well.
He
was in a safe. You know, also look at where he was at. I mean, he was at this film festival, which is full of people who probably share his opinion. You know, it's like, yes, the studio system does this and we hate it. It sucks. We all do this, the independent art. And, well, let's whine about it, you know, and that's sort of what I got from it. And it's like, well, I'm surrounded by a bunch of people who like the stuff that I like. So I'm going to talk about that in this way. And it's like, well, you know, if you have a problem with it, do something about it, or try to do something about it. But he just sort of threw up his arms, was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. I, again, you know, that was something else that, you know, because it's been so long or so removed from like when Ethan and I first started talking about this, one of my huge problems with this whole thing is, you know, it's a very smart speech. He knows his shit. He's been in the business for a long time. He's successful. And he says all this stuff, and he says a lot of really good, really solid points, but he doesn't offer any solutions. His solution is basically make better movies. And I'm sorry, Steven Soderbergh, you have your movies out, but they don't do you know, they don't do these blockbuster numbers. And I don't want to keep throwing out Transformers or Iron Man or whatever, but, you know, they just don't make big money. And as far as I'm concerned, his movies, you know, this I don't know. But if I had to guess, I'd say, with the exception of maybe his Ocean's movies, they're probably 50, 60, you know, 50, $100 million movies, you know, because he's got that name recognition. He's kind of got that, you know, oh, I got to go see a film, you know, because this is Soderbergh and, you know, stuff like that. But he's got his successes, and it just, I don't know. I mean, it is greedy the right thing I'm looking for? I don't know, because I just don't like this whole thing about, I really don't like the whole thing about the right and the wrong movies. I mean, because that's just ridiculous. That's ridiculous to me because of how subjective it is.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, it's almost hypocritical, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we're no better. I mean, it's we talk about movies we like here and there. We talk about movies you don't like here and there. And our chief thing is everyone has different tastes, and everyone takes out of a movie what they bring to it. And, you know, it's that's just the nature of the business. Mm-hmm. And when 90% of the 90% of the audience out there, they want Iron Man 3, they want Avengers, they want you know, Star Wars, they want these big spectacles, you know, and that's what they're getting because that's what's making the money.
Yeah, it is.
And it's just the nature of the beast. It's what is happening. And yes, you can. What is nice about it is as a quote unquote independent filmmaker, you can finance and distribute your movie yourself nowadays. You know, you can do it all from the comfort of your home, and
you can do it with an iPhone and a YouTube account.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, granted, you know, that's pretty short-sighted of anybody to say, but you know, there is, you know, value to that. I mean, man, goddamn, Steven Soderbergh's first big movie was Sex, Lies, and Videotape, I think. And, you know, it's a much different film market now than when he started. And, you know, I think that there's something going on with the studio system that we need to be aware of. It's something that we need to I see a movie crash happening, honestly. You know, we had the stock market crash and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I kind of see something bad's going to wind up happening with these fucking with movies because, and he talks about it, you know, how studios are, you know, they'll have a movie that comes out and it does, you know, really well for them. And they'll go and they'll spend, you know, more money on the sequel and more money on the third one and et cetera. And, you know, that could wind up being a problem.
You're talking about like sort of the real estate bubble. And there is, I do think there is merit to say there is a bubble when it comes to movies like that. So you have the first movie that does well, then you do a second movie and the third movie. Eventually you have the Spider-Man 3 problem where the studio just rushes it out and gets it out and it's not good. People hate it.
Yep.
And then that bubble bursts and you have to start from scratch, or try to resurrect it and make a fourth one, or you know, whatever, wherever you're at. But if you're slow and steady and smart about what you do, I mean, you get like the Harry Potter movies, for crying out loud, you know. I think that's ultimately where I think part of what he was going for is you know, is at least what I want to go for, what I want to sort of say to Hollywood is just be smart about it. You know, don't rush this shit out. And take your time and do it right. Don't say, well, we want to put out one movie, one of these movies every year, every 2 years. I think that's you're trying to make a deadline, not make a movie, and that's a bad thing.
It is. And again, you know, I do think that there's a point in what you're saying about you know, how like, you know, the Spider-Man franchise is a good example of a bubble, but I do wonder if there's going to be a larger bubble happening. You know, because you know what happens for our appetite as moviegoers, what happens if it gets to the point where the only thing that anybody is going to go see, you know, with any regularity, you know, is something that costs like, you know, fucking Lone Ranger money or, you know, any of those big ass budget movies. And in order for them to break even, they have to, you know, make over $500 million. You know, that's one of those things I thought about when I was looking at, you know, like, you know, I don't know. I still don't know what I think is going to happen with the Lone Ranger because I know some people that are really goddamn excited about it. But it had such a big budget, and it just strikes me as a hell of a gamble at the very least, you know, that they're going to be spending, you know, $250 million on a character who hasn't been viable in, what, 30, 40 years, something about that. And then, but also you got to remember that this 30, 40 this 30, 40 year old franchise, this movie has to make, you know, $500 million to break even. That's kind of crazy to me. At least it's, you know, it's a crazy way of thinking. I mean, what do you think?
About Lone Ranger?
Well,
not excited, but
well, but
I honestly think that the movie industry is sort of sectioned itself off enough, though, that, you know, if one studio falls, it's not going to cause the other studios to fall. I mean, some parts in Hollywood where, you know, just look at where New Line was. I mean, put out the Lord of the Rings movies. It was a huge moneymaker, and then they went bankrupt, you know. I mean, and now they're owned up. They got all bought up by, who was it, MGM or God, who really cares at this point, which also declared bankruptcy. But, you know, it's things happen. People, I honestly think movies will always be around, and I think people will always put money into it. And as long as they don't make the mistake of making it too expensive to go to the movies, or harder to get your movie fix, as in, you know, it's harder to get them on Netflix, harder to get them off of iTunes, harder to go to the movie theater and see them, I think they're going to do fine. It's just we'll just see a rotation, and we'll see some studios fall, we'll see some rise, and we'll see some fall and rise again. You know, I think that's sort of what's been happening over the last 50, 60 years.
Yeah. You know, it's just I don't know. It's a weird time to kind of look at movies, because I do think that something's happening. I do think something's going to wind up happening. And, you know, whether it's, you know, a negative or a positive thing, you know, for movie studios or even for movie fans, because, you know, it's all fine and dandy. We can sit here and say, yeah, God damn it, you know, studios are, you know, businesses and they need to make money and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, people need to want to go, too. You know, and so yeah. I kind of wonder what's going to happen. I kind of wonder, I mean, I doubt it, but, you know, maybe we'll go through a, you know, a de-renaissance, so to speak. Maybe we'll go through a thing where people are wanting to go and see, you know, less action sort of extravaganza movies. They're going to want to see, you know, stuff like, The Artist. I was kind of hoping that we were going to see, you know, like less, you know, like, you know, you know, just like more smaller movies like that, you know, that people are going to really like, and, you know, things with smaller budgets. And, you know, I've always said that, you know, like a telltale sign happening is like when we get something that's almost entirely practical effects, you know, win the Oscar for visual effects, you know, when we have, you know, big ass visual effects houses out there, you know, that are, you know, spending, you know, millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, you know, and then there's some guy out there with the, like his mom's coat on a mop or something winning an Oscar over people with those kinds of resources to them. But I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. But overall, I do think that I'm still of two minds about this, because he does say a lot of smart things, and obviously the movie market isn't perfect, and obviously, you know, there's something, you know, dumb going on when, you know, they're spending that much money to just even break even, you know, especially with the way that marketing is working these days. Marketing in the movie industry is ridiculous, because they spend their budget over again at the very least just to get word out to people that it's there. Which is, you know, I guess I can get it for, you know, smaller movies, for stuff that people don't see coming. But do you really think that Iron Man needed a couple $100 million, you know, marketing campaign to let people know it's coming? No, probably not. I think that
no. I mean, when you're talking about things like Iron Man, I mean, there's that core group. There's that group of people that are going to go see it no matter what the hell. They're going to know when it's coming out. They're going to go see it. And I think they finally sort of started realizing that you don't need to advertise to the comic book fan, because the comic book fan is going to know when the movie comes out and is going to go see it no matter what.
Yeah.
We've said it before. So like Superman, oh, it might suck, but fuck, I'm going to go see it anyway, you know? And how many times have you seen people saying that online, and people bitching about Iron Man 3? It's like, oh, fuck Iron Man 3. It's stupid. I'm going to go see it though. It's like, well, okay. You're part of the problem then, technically.
No, there's no technically. You know? They are part of the problem.
It's like you are, you know, perpetuating this the system, and you bitching about it and saying, oh, I went and saw it and it sucked. Well, it's like, well, you still went and saw it. You still gave them your money. So
yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, I have the right to sit here and bitch about the Transformers if I want to, because I only saw the first one, you know, at least of my own accord. But, you know, I don't. That's not my style. But you know,
we very much like talking about things we like rather than things we don't like.
And, you know, that's kind of it. That's kind of the whole thing to me is, you know, I don't know. It just like the whole entire thing is kind of stupid to me because it's just like there's this thing. And actually, you know, I ended up unfriending a friend of mine on Facebook, you know, last couple of days because of this, just this basis negativity towards movies. And it's not a matter of, you know, oh, he said that Iron Man 3 sucked and I liked it, boo hoo hoo. It's just like every fucking thing that this person ever had to say about a movie was something negative. And it's just like there's this attitude from these people that, you know, call themselves movie fans, but, you know, they say, oh, look, the RoboCop remake's coming. Oh, fuck that. They shouldn't make that. Oh, Iron Man 3's coming out. Oh, those fucking unoriginal bastards. Or, you know, oh, look, they're making Lone Ranger. Oh, that's stupid because it's a TV show. Or, oh, look, they're going to... Or, you know, oh, look, you know, Christopher Nolan's making a new sci-fi epic. Oh, no, fuck that because, you know, I didn't like it. You know, it just seems like these people that call themselves movie fans call themselves... And some of these people are in the fucking industry. This is what I don't get about it. Every single news article, they're like, "This is stupid. This shouldn't happen." To me, it does not seem even in your best self interest to like say, "Oh, this project shouldn't happen. That project shouldn't happen." You know, if you're trying to work in the industry, then God damn it, you want to see every frickin' project happen so there's a possibility, so there's more jobs, so you know maybe you can sneak your way in there. But there's also this whole thing about. Every movie coming out, every movie that's popular, every movie that's coming out, oh, this is stupid. You know, I'd rather them make, you know, I wish it was like when, you know, fucking, Forbidden Planet came out, you know, because that was a good movie. It's like, that was 70 years ago, man. I mean, that movie isn't gone, and I do not understand, I just don't understand this point of view of people wanting less. I guess that's a big problem with me, and... That's something that came across from Soderbergh. I mean, it just, I don't get it. I just do not get that attitude. I mean, have you been privy to any of that? I mean, have you heard people be the same way, Ethan, or am I just lucky?
No, I've heard it, but I choose to ignore and or block those people because it's my Facebook and I can, you know, look at what I want to look at.
Yeah, but these are my friends, you know, it's just all like, you know, it is kind of weird.
No, and that attitude gets to me. It's that whole, oh, hey, they've remade this, so it's ruined the whole thing for me. And and we've been over this numerous times, you know, talking Star Wars and stuff like that. It's like, well, just because someone has remade this or done this doesn't take away from the original. I mean, you still have that.
Right.
And we live in a time now where we can – it's much easier to choose what we watch. You can really customize your viewing experience for everything now. And if you don't want to watch something that pisses you off, then don't fucking watch it. Go watch something you want to watch. That's what you're going to do anyway. If you really want to be miserable for your whole life and sit there and watch things that you hate, why are you doing that? You know, what is the point other than just to, so you can bitch about things?
Yeah.
It'd be like me watching the Resident Evil movies over and over and over again, just saying, fuck, these movies are shit. And I'm like, well, watch something else.
Yeah. I don't know. There's also, like, with some of these people, there seems to be this perception that, you know, oh, they got tricked into seeing, I don't know, what's the latest anti-It movie? Fast and the Furious 5, okay? They got tricked into seeing Fast and the Furious 5 or 6 or whichever. I don't even know how many there are. But they got tricked into seeing that movie, and they didn't like it. And, you know, so, you know, whatever reason. And so they feel like they had 2 hours of their life stolen, okay? So yeah. There are people...
We've established on this show that there are very, very few movies out there that we feel... absolutely fervent about hating and do, like, actively want to discourage people from seeing them.
Yeah, I can think of one.
Most movies that we don't like, that's just it. We don't like it. We move on to something else.
Like, oh, well, shame on me. You know, it's just like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, and again, you know, I mean, I talked about this on, you know, this show and the other show, and, you know, it just keeps coming up that there's this stupid thing going on to where people think that they have some sort of sense of entitlement if they have, you know, they read the comic books, or they used to watch Star Trek, or they had a Darth Vader figure when they were a toy, or a kid, or something like that. That, you know, because, you know, they have that personal connection to it, then that means that they are personally owed something.
And if it doesn't play to their, you know, everything that they want, everything they built up in their head, everything that their, you know, that their Ritalin addled brain will, you know, like popped into their head when they were a kid, then, you know, fuck this movie, you know, fuck the director, fuck the actors, and, you know, fuck it. You know, it's the Holocaust and the worst thing that's ever happened. And it's just, I guess that's my problem with the speech. But, you know, it's also, I think, the reason, like, why maybe where I'm using, I chose the lightning rod. I chose him as a lightning rod is because this, because he is basically just a, I don't want to call him an internet troll, but you know, he kind of sounds like most of the people out there on the message boards. He's like, oh, you know, I don't even know, man.
He's a troll. He's just a high profile troll.
You know, he's a high profile troll. But you know, I don't know. I just, and there's also this other thing out there that, you know, when people do that, when people say, oh, you know, don't make Iron Man 3 or Transformers or you know, Star Trek or or Christopher Nolan's Interstellar, or adapt a book or do this or do that, then they're taken away from something that I'm potentially going to enjoy. And, you know, they're trying to, you know, chip away at this thing that, you know, that gives Ethan and I a reason to podcast every week. You know, something that, you know, I like watching movies. Hell, I like watching movies that I ended up not particularly liking because, you know, there's that experience. I don't know. I guess my whole point is I just think that you need to watch what you want to watch, and you just kind of need to roll with things in terms of the in terms of what's going on with, you know, with Hollywood. You know, do you think I give a shit? I think I gave a shit those, you know, 5 or 6 years when the Twilight movies were coming out. No, but they were the big thing. But I also understood that maybe that was a niche in, you know, Hollywood and pop culture and the zeitgeist that, you know, maybe it wasn't aimed at me. You know, not every movie is made for me.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I think that's the ultimate thing is rather than watching something and bitching about it, what I try to do is if you have the, if you see a movie or see something that you don't like, that it's, you know, it's just, nah, I didn't like it, I think that makes you appreciate the ones that you like more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you go and watch the latest Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Last Stand. It's not a good movie. You know, it makes you appreciate his good movies better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know what? I liked Terminator and Terminator 2. Those were a lot of fun. Yeah. Those were good. That's good Arnold.
Yeah.
It makes you go back and watch those or track down stuff that he did back in the day. It's like, oh, I haven't watched Conan in a while, so you go and watch that.
Yeah, that's a good Schwarzenegger movie, yeah.
Exactly, right. Huh. And you sort of lament and go, well, you know, it's too bad his newest movie was crap, but, you know, it doesn't change the fact that we've got all this great stuff.
And then maybe there'll be something great coming out in the future.
Yep, exactly. But regardless, I think Soderbergh just he was preaching to the choir on this one. You know, it's like he was in a group of like-minded people, and I think it was just his sort of platform to rant that wasn't a message board or a comments thread. So. Yep.
And I guess he got what happened because we've just spent over an hour talking about, you know, this goofy little speech that he made. So I think that we've said all we need to say about it. Do you have any closing thoughts about it, Ethan? Like any overall arcing ideas, or what do you think?
Just because a movie comes out doesn't mean you have to go see it. I mean, I for one am one who tries to stay away from big spoilers on stuff just because, you know, hey, I know I'm going to go see an Iron Man 4. I know I'm going to go see Thor 2. I know I'm going to see Captain America 2. I went and saw Star Trek and Star Trek Into Darkness, all those. I'm going to see the sequels. You just accept that and move on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to. If you want to be all, you know, get on a high horse about it, then, you know, maybe these movies aren't for you and you should talk about something you like talking about.
Or, if you're, you know, maybe I guess my quick little final thought here is, you know, I think that Steven Soderbergh is in a unique position. I mean, Ethan and I can sit here in our Kansas houses and bitch about movies or say how much we like movies as much as we can. But unfortunately, other than going to the movies, we're not going to make much of a difference. And even going to the movies, because we're two people, we don't go to the movies that much to we're going to, you know, single-handedly or at least double-handedly, you know, change the movie market. Steven Soderbergh can probably get about any movie he wants made. I mean, and there's a couple of times where he's talking about, you know, oh, you know, people just didn't get side effects, you know, and, you know, he's saw it fall apart. But, you know, he's out there making these movies. You know, he's putting out his movies, and, you know, maybe he needs to find a different market. I mean, I don't know which studio he typically goes through. I can't recall off the top of my head, but maybe he needs to shop around to a different studio. I don't know if he's contracted or what else, but maybe he needs to, you know, self-produce. Maybe he needs to do something. But I do think that he is in a unique position to do something about this, and maybe he should do that instead of, you know, going and quite possibly creating, you know, 500 more Steven Soderberghs, you know, by, you know, giving this speech to these young idiotic people that just want to say, you know, every fucking Hollywood movie that comes out is crap. Okay, so I guess unless you have anything else to add, that's going to stick a fork in this, do you?
I think that sounds like it sticks a fork in it.
It sticks a fork in this bitch. So I guess until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Ethan.
Just let your bitch flag fly, I guess.
Go see something you like. Bitch, shut the fuck up. Get out of my face. I'm sharing something I love, and you're just spreading hate. I'll play my guitar, and I'll sing you a song. You said that I'm worthless. My statements were wrong. You're a faggot, dirty hoe. You wank yourself off at night. What the fuck, LOL. Crawl into a hole and die. Thumbs up and I'll subscribe. Flag it inappropriate. Insert foul language here. You claim you're a patriot. Bitch, shut the fuck up. Get out of my face. I'm sharing something I love, and you're just spreading the hate. Now play my guitar, now sing you a song. You'll claim that I'm worthless, and you call me wrong. Just shut the fuck up. Just shut the fuck up. Just shut the fuck up. STF you up. Shut the fuck up.
Hey, want to hear the best story ever? Sure. I've been playing that Justice God Among Us game. Mm-hmm. You know, it rocks and all that shit. And Chloe's been watching and she loves it. Like, yay, Batman and Green. All, you know, all these different people.
Right.
And she asked to see... she wanted to watch the Avengers. So I start showing her the Avengers, and she's all like, where the hell's Batman? Like, Batman's not in the Avengers. She's like, what do you mean? He's in the Justice League. So he's not in this movie? No? Then turn it off. It was awesome. I was proud of that.
This podcast was cut by Uncool Aaron.